Welcome to Animal Airwaves Live here on WUFTFM, our weekly hour-long show devoted to the discussion of the health and welfare of animals. I'm Dana Hill, so happy to welcome back to the show. It's been a while, Dr. Allison Morton from the UF College of Veterinary Medicine. We are going to talk today about lameness in horses and the causes and treatments that are available to horse owners. If you'd like to join the conversation, our telephone number is 352-392-8989. We'll be back with Animal Airwaves Live after this. Welcome to Animal Airwaves Live here on WUFTFM. This is our weekly hour-long show devoted to the discussion of the health and welfare of animals. I'm Dana Hill. So happy you could tune in this afternoon and so happy that I can welcome back my guest from the UF College of Veterinary Medicine, Dr. Allie Morton. We're going to be talking today about an area that she specializes in, which isn't just horses per se, though of course she definitely specializes in equine medicine. We're going to talk about lameness, which is an issue that is pretty serious because, as you know, if a horse can't walk, well, then it's not in very good shape. And we're going to find out why this might happen, what can be done to treat it, and I'm really happy to welcome you back, Dr. Morton.
Thanks, Dana. It's great to be back.
We have talked before on this program about lameness, but I feel like it's been quite a long, long time. And it's good to kind of go over some of the area that we've gone over in the past, particularly how common this disease is. Do you see it on a regular basis?
Yes, I see it daily in our practice, and the service that I work with specializes in basically the lameness diagnosis, treatment, whether that is a medical or a surgical therapy for lameness. And if we talk about lameness in horses, we can be talking about something as severe as a fracture in the leg or something more subtle that may be a small gait abnormality that is limiting a horse's performance. So there's a broad amount of spectrum in the disease.
Essentially, lameness is any kind of impairment in the horse's gait.
Yes, exactly. So any kind of gait abnormality, and this is most commonly caused by some discomfort from an injury or osteoarthritis, but it also can be something that is caused by a neurologic condition or something that is a mechanical. So some of us are not always perfectly straight, and horses can have injuries that that cause them to have mechanical, non-painful lamenesses as well, too.
When we talk about lameness, there are probably different extremes, right? You've got ones that are pretty
Absolutely.
Minor to ones that are really, really substantial. And the ones that are minor are likely, as anyone can imagine, if something hurts you, maybe you have a blister or something on your foot, you go a little bit easy on it the next day. I know that I wore a new pair of shoes about 6 months ago, and that first couple days they were uncomfortable, and I got some blisters. And so, you know, the day that I'm not, you know, the following day when I'm not wearing these new shoes because I need to give it a break, I'm a bit going gingerly on my foot.
Yes.
I mean, this is one of the kind of ways that horses can express lameness. They have some sort of discomfort. It could be mild, but if it's just something like they stepped on something, it could be probably not so serious that a horse owner would have to worry about the horse's life or anything like that, right? That's one extreme.
Absolutely.
And then the other extreme is a kind of lameness that really is troubling, that it could be an indication of a potentially life-limiting kind of problem.
For sure. We see all of those spectra of injuries and causes of lameness in horses. And some of the most common causes are causes like you're talking about, or some sole bruises from a horse stepping on some uneven ground or a stone. And, you know, maybe after having a new shoe placed, a little bit of discomfort that may be associated with that. And those are very, you know, self-limiting. And most of the time those will resolve without much worry. We certainly do see some milder lamenesses or slight abnormalities that can be performance limiting for our horses that are showing and racing and things that still can be very mild but can be consistent, that we can, you know, have a minor injury that we may be able to diagnose and treat as well.
It might be helpful to have some anatomy lessons here. A horse weighs, let's say on average, about what?
About 1,100 pounds.
About 1,100 pounds. Okay, that's mm-hmm. a pretty good amount of weight. Do they bear their weight relatively evenly on their four limbs?
Mostly from left to right, yes, they should. But horses bear the majority of their weight for most breeds on their four limbs. And their four limbs act also as kind of shock absorbers. So they will see more lameness in the four limbs versus the hind limbs. So the hind limbs tend to be more propulsive and not carry as much of the weight. So although we do see very common injuries and arthritis and other things in the hind limbs, the majority of it will be more likely in the four limbs.
That makes sense because, of course, the horse has most of its neck and head in front of those
Absolutely,
legs in the front,
yes.
right? So there's more weight there on the front. The weight then is distributed evenly between left and right, more towards the front. When you're talking about that much weight, though, you know, that's a lot of weight on what everyone would recognize as a fairly narrow leg.
Yeah, very, very fine design.
Let's talk about this fine design and what are the elements that make up this horse's lower leg in particular.
So their lower limbs, so horses basically stand on what would be the equivalent of our middle finger. So their foot is the very, very end of our finger. And as we go up, they have what we call their, in layman's terms, their ankle, which is actually the joint that our finger joins to our hand. It would call the fetlock joint in the horse. And then when we go up to what is commonly referred to a knee in the horse, it's actually like our wrist. So they're standing on what is, you know, very fine bones in our structure, and then their limb goes up above there, just like ours does, up into their shoulder area. So they're standing on a very, very, you know, narrow, small structure, and that allows them to, you know, move very quickly, but it also puts them at some, you know, disadvantage for different types of injuries.
I don't want to put you on the spot to ask you something about animals you don't probably work with, but is this similar at all to cattle? Or are there other animals that have this same kind of structure?
Sure, yes. Ruminants, cattle have similar. They have actually two kind of toes, if you've noticed. They have clove hoofs, so they stand kind of on the equivalent of two fingers. Goats are the same way. You know, llamas, camels are like that as well, too. And then if we look at the species that are similar to horses, like zebras and donkeys in there, they have the same type of anatomy as well.
Okay, and the hoof itself is a remarkable thing. Let's talk about the hoof and what it's made out of and how it works.
The hoof is the capsule that goes around the bone that is makes up that their foot, which that bone, like we said before, is like the tip of our finger. It's called the distal phalanx or the third phalanx, which is just the bone that sits in there, also referred to as the coffin bone. And this hoof capsule surrounds that. It's kind of made, it's made out of mostly keratinous substance like our fingernails. And it's attached in a very kind of odd way to the bone. It's almost like Velcro. So it has these little interdigitating structures that attach that capsule to the bone in that area. And that is an area that is vulnerable to injury. If you've ever heard of horses that have founder, that's what happens, that area called the lamina gets injured. So that Velcro attachment can get injured. And that can be from trauma, overweight bearing, or when horses get very sick, the blood flow stops to that area, which is very, very vascular, and then causes some inflammation and separation of that area. So a very common cause of lameness in horses, severe lameness in horses, is related to that structure.
Mm-hmm. When I think about the idea of the horse essentially bearing some of it, so much of its weight on what would be the equivalent of our middle finger, I think about how in human anatomy, at least, that simply wouldn't be possible. We don't have the skeletal strength or the joint strength to support our
right.
weight on such a small part of our bodies.
Right.
How do we know how horses evolved to have this kind of structure?
I mean, it's been over very, you know, millions and billions of years, but I think it was mostly for the speed and certainly the type of the animal that it came from. So they used to have, you know, more digits, and so they evolved to having just the single kind of digit standing on their toe, per se. And is involved with kind of the function of being able to run quickly away from basically predators.
Right, because horses are, I suppose, when it comes down to it, they would be a prey animal. They don't really have much of a way to fight anybody. So
no, they can run quickly.
They can run quickly.
Kick hard, but not hard enough for some of their predators.
And okay, so this hoof structure is really important, but also a place where there's some vulnerability.
Absolutely.
As you move kind of up the limb and you get to some of these other joints, do they have similar vulnerabilities?
Yes, each of them, you know, the more commonly horses have problems more towards their foot. So what we say distally in the bottom part of their limb. So their foot is a very vulnerable area. But all the joints as we move up and kind of as we go up the limb, it becomes a little bit less vulnerable. So we get more muscle coverage. So there's more protection and less, you know, weight bearing on smaller structures. So they're not quite as, you know, as loaded as some of the other joints below them and as high motion. So in addition to just vulnerable single kind of event injuries, the kind of, you know, chronic wear and tear that we see with arthritis, certainly in the higher motion joints, this is common, and that happens in some of our lower joints and in the hind limb, some of our more of our upper joints, so our stifle and our hock.
Okay. I think about the way that the joints work in, you know, our own legs or in our own arms and what kind of joints they are. In horses, do these kinds of joints have a name? Are they similar in function to the way that some of our joints and our bodies work?
They're very similar. Actually, the horse serves as a very good model for a lot of the conditions that people get. So just like, you know, our athletes that play football may get injuries to their knees, horses get similar injuries depending on kind of the type of sports that they do as well, too. And so all the same joints, very similar anatomy to people, just a little bit more refined, we see in the horse. And a lot of the same type of musculoskeletal or orthopedic disease that we see in people.
Anyone who has seen a horse close up, or even if you haven't seen a horse close up, you'll know that below a certain point, there's not a lot of meat on these bones,
right?
Really. The horse has a fairly lean limb. Particularly, you know, as you get closer to the hoof, let's say.
Right, right.
How is it that, I mean, that tells me that the muscular structure doesn't need to really be in that part of the limb,
right?
All
mm-hmm.
of the actual work of locomotion to get that horse moving takes place higher up in the body.
Right, so the muscular components of that are...
So if we talk about lameness, then in the lower part of the limbs, it's generally not related to the muscles.
No. Yeah, you know, horses certainly can get muscle injuries, but it's more common in the lower limb. Basically from the knee down and the hock down, there are no muscles. So we have complex bones, tendons, and ligaments. And so horses, because of their long tendons and ligaments that they have and the degree of kind of forces and strains that are placed upon them when they do some of their athletic events, they are very vulnerable to injury. So it's very common for us to see tendon injuries and ligament injuries where all these kind of structures are doing their job.
And these structures are just below the surface of the skin, essentially.
Yes,
they
yes.
don't have any protection from a lot of meat that surrounds the
right.
bones like we might have, say, in our thighs or something where there's, you know, a lot
of muscle. Right.
The horse, as it kind of moves along, can you describe the sort of motion of the horse's body, you know, with these four legs? I think long ago they did an experiment and showed that at some point a horse that's galloping has all four of its
right.
legs off the ground at one
yeah.
time.
So, yeah, depending on the gait. So and when we look at, you know, the number of beats or hoofs that are on the ground at the time, depends on the gait. So if we look at most kind of standard horses, that we have other horses that we call gaited horses that have kind of special gaits. They're kind of like little, you know, dancing horses. A lot of times the Pasifinos and some of our other gaited horses. But they have basically a walk, a trot, a canter and a gallop. And so at each one of these, the speed increases and the symmetry of the movement is different. So when they're trotting, when one forelimb goes forward, the opposite hind limb goes forward. And when they canter or lope, the forelimb that's going forward, also the hind limb that's going the same side is going forward. So there's a lot of difference. And the canter evolves into the gallop as they get faster. And as you can imagine, as you're moving quickly and, with these four limbs, at some point you're not touching the ground.
That is fascinating. I never even thought to think that there would be kind of a reversal. I always kind of assumed, just from sort of seeing horses moved along, that, okay, if you've got the, let's say, the right front forward, that then the back on the other side would be forward.
Right, and that happens at the trot in most horses.
Yeah.
Now, we do have horses that we call pacers, and there's some of the standardbred race horses that pace, that will move in the opposite way. So when they're trotting or pacing, they're going at a trot speed, and the left forelimb and the left hind limb move together. And so those guys look a little odd when you're not used to watching them, but that's a different type of a gait than a kind of a standard horse would have.
So as a standard horse would move and accelerate from, say, a trot, moving towards the gallop, it changes the position of the limbs as it goes.
The symmetry, yeah.
Does it do this? I mean, certainly it does this automatically. Is it an awkward transition, or do most horses go very quickly?
Most horses will go very quickly, and that's one area where we can see some problems. So horses going from a trot to a canter, some horses will have some difficulties with this. Or when we talk about the limbs going in the correct order and at the canter, we talk about leads. So if they're going with their left lead, the left forelimb and the left hind going together. And sometimes when they have, say, hind limb problems, especially up in their upper joints, we call the stifle, that sometimes that doesn't work very well. So the hind limbs they'll have what we call counter canter, and they won't move synchronously, and they may have problems picking it up, or they may break from it from a canter to a trot. So that's one indication of a performance limiting issue or a lameness, or sometimes it's developmental. As they get, they're young to old, they are a little less coordinated, and as they get older, they can get some coordination as they mature.
As a horse moves up in speed, until eventually it has a moment in which all of its legs are up off the ground, mm-hmm. It's going to be coming down with a lot of force. Now,
absolutely.
An animal that weighs 1,100 pounds that's moving at any degree of speed is going to hit the ground with many, many pounds of force, even above its own weight. Yeah. Do we know about how many pounds per inch the horses?
It depends the speed and obviously the size of the horse. But if we look at some of the kind of, when we look at a horse kind of cantering and when they're putting all their weight on, say, the left forelimb, and we can look in that, those forces change from, if at the walk it was, say, a relative number of one, those can go up to 50 to 100 times the forces that are normally at the walk, at the canter. And then if you add things in like horses that are jumping and going over fences, and so you can imagine some of these horses jump 4 and 5 foot fences, and then they're taking another component of height and velocity going on there. So it's a nice physics exercise for anybody who wants to do the math.
Sure. It's an extreme that only the most elite human athletes would ever approach at all, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you and I, in our daily lives, I'd never do anything that would involve that kind of degree of change in relative amount of force that's being exerted on any part of my body. If I'm just sort of casually walking, or maybe occasionally jogging or something like that, I doubt that I'm experiencing, exponentially greater portions of my body weight, mm-hmm. Maybe a couple times, but not 50. That seems a lot.
It's very similar. The physics applies to you and me, and you can imagine we don't weigh 1,100 pounds and don't have the speed and velocities that horses reach.
Is that where lamenesses are initially noticed often, in when the horse is being called upon to do something kind of at speed, or doing maybe a jump? Is that where horses will often present lamenesses?
Surely we see that. So some horses that are race horses that, you know, usually will go easily at speed may start to become slower or have problems transitioning from, you know, a short race to a longer race. And so those things can certainly indicate some sort of, you know, orthopedic issue, pain. Horses that jump, certainly when you start having things hurt, then they may not want to jump that bigger fence. So they may, you know, balk or stop at the jump.
Ah, so horses, they're aware that this is uncomfortable, even maybe before their riders or their trainers are aware of it. And it may be that the first indication that the horse feels uncomfortable is when it doesn't do something it's called upon to do.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of horses will have what they call behavioral changes. Like, you know, he used to be, you know, great and would love to perform his job, and now he's a little cranky, doesn't want to go as well to the right or to the left, or he started to stop at the jumps. And so a lot of times our riders will notice these subtle things, behavioral things or performance things, before we actually see an obvious lameness.
Is lameness an issue in which you might be able to say, it's not apparent just when the horse is kind of standing around or maybe just walking kind of casually about doing its sort of horsey thing? Is this one of those conditions that if you catch it early, maybe it's not going to be severe? Or is it one of those things that it may be severe under certain conditions and not at other times, but it still might be a serious problem?
Yeah, sure. So we certainly have, if we can find some of the earlier, you know, more subtle lamenesses before they become a, you know, a worse lameness, we have a better shot at treating them. That makes, you know, most sense in most situations. So sometimes we have some early, you know, kind of inflammation in joints or tendons, and if we, you know, just rehab that horse properly, then there's no problem. Certainly we have injuries that are severe that are kind of one single event, and those, you know, we deal with as well too, and they may be more serious. But certainly there are horses that have some maybe mild lameness that can perform very well doing, you know, kind of more day-to-day light exercise than if they have higher demand. So if they were that jumper or that racehorse, they would not be able to perform as well and may have more kind of obvious lameness evident when we put them to that kind of test. So certainly we have different circumstances that show us different kinds of manifestations of lameness.
What would be the most common scenario you would encounter?
Ooh, there's a lot of scenarios, but the most common thing we see, and in all kind of veterinary practice, is problems within the horse's foot. It's a, you know, it's an area where we have to trim them regularly because it's like our fingernails. Their hoof capsule grows regularly, and so part of that is very important in providing what we call hoof balance. And so hoof balance is one of the most important things for keeping horses sound. So that your farrier that does your horse's shoes and trims your horses are a really integral part of keeping your horse in performance fitness. And so the problems in the foot are very common. So we'll see a horse that comes in with a lot of similar kind of presentations when they have foot pain. So a lot of times it's in both front feet. So they may have one day that it's worse than the left, one day it's worse than the right, or sometimes they don't feel it, but they feel like they're just going shorter. And we would watch this horse go and then do some diagnostics that we could localize it to that area. And then depending on that, there's a lot of things within that foot that can go wrong.
Mm-hmm. You brought up the farrier, and since this hoof is such an important component of this horse's body and is really, I mean, that's where the horse is touching the ground, right?
Mm-hmm.
How important is it that A, horse even wear horseshoes at all, and B, that these shoes really be fitted properly and be maintained in good condition, and that it be regularly checked so that one notices that there's not a problem?
Right. So if your horse does wear shoes, the fit is so important. So that can really influence future growth of that horse's foot and also can really change kind of the mechanics of how that horse moves. So we want to always have a shoe that fits properly, and maybe even like if we got orthotics at our orthopedist for our shoe, that may be actually helpful for doing certain things for improving balance or motion of that horse's foot. All horses don't have to wear shoes. So depending on their hoof structure, the thickness of their sole, and what they do on a daily basis may dictate whether or not they need shoes. A lot of horses that are doing a lot of exercise and a lot of different surfaces, they benefit from having shoes because of the wear and tear on their hoof itself. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times we're using shoes to actually help the horse balance and help their movement so that they don't get injuries.
When we see horses that are just kind of pasture horses, they may not need shoes at all?
Yeah, they may not. And certainly in Florida, we have a lot of moisture and a lot of sand and a lot of heat. So we get problems with horses' hooves very commonly because of this kind of scenario that we put them in. So if they start to get hoof cracks, those horses may need shoes, even though they're not doing upper level performance, to prevent some of the cracking. But if they have a good healthy foot and it's trimmed and they're happy out in the pasture, they don't necessarily need a shoe.
The material the hoof is composed of, the material in which the shoe is attached, that material continuously grows?
Yes.
Does it grow fairly evenly?
In most cases it does, but obviously like if we have pigeon toes or if we're knock-kneed, sometimes the balance and the pressures on our foot, just like the horse's foot, may be uneven, and this may cause some uneven growth. And that's why it's important that we have them trimmed regularly. And in horses that may have a little bit of this propensity for uneven hoof growth, that we make sure we trim them a little bit more frequently than maybe their pasture mate that has the perfectly straight foot.
Mm-hmm. So, as we think about the way that horses' hoofs work and hooves work and the way that the hoof accepts the shoe, do you feel like you see horses exhibit lameness more often if they wear shoes or if they don't wear shoes?
It's probably fairly equal. Certainly, poorly fitted shoes and poor hoof balance is a common thing that we see, and it's something very often horse owners, veterinarians, and farriers get frustrated with because it is such an important thing. So it's something that we commonly encounter, and we kind of talk about. We have a farrier at our university that's there when we receive a lot of our cases that works with us to help improve hoof balance and proper shoe fit for our patients.
So the problems that a horse might exhibit from maybe a not very good fit or maybe from an uneven growth, are those problems readily corrected just by correcting the fit or maybe trimming the hoof a little bit and so that it's a bit more even?
Surely in early cases, if we can get ahead of this game, yeah, we can make early changes that can help the horse's balance and can correct some of the small abnormalities that they have before they develop a lameness. When these things go on, their hoofs will change shape, and we can modify the shape of a horse's hoof over time, but it only grows, maybe a half inch to an inch a month that we're looking at, that amount of growth in that time. When we want to change the shape of that whole horse's hoof, we're looking at a year's probably time before we could change it. So if with severe hoof kind of abnormalities, it may take some time for our farriers to be able to do it. And, during those times, the hoof and the other joints are a little bit more vulnerable to injury during that time.
At this stage of the game, if there is some discomfort that owners or trainers or riders might notice, if it's early on, would that horse owner or trainer or rider be able to work in conjunction with the farrier to sort of make some subtle corrections that might eliminate the problem altogether before a veterinarian needs to get involved?
It's possible, and we always recommend that trainers and owners have a very good relationship with our farrier. Our farrier is one of our most important people that help our horses in their performance and in their routine herd kind of health maintenance. So in those early times, certainly the farrier can have a lot of input and help. What we worry about is if a horse, say we have a horse that has had some abnormal hoof balance and the farrier's worked on them in a couple times and there's no improvement, is that just the problem, or has it led to another problem where they have some inflammation in the joint or some other injuries in some of the ligaments and tendons that are in that area because they have had abnormal balance? So if something persists more than, you know, a shoeing cycle or two, which, you know, is about a month or two in duration, then they should certainly contact their veterinarian.
You're listening to Animal Airwaves Live here on WUFD-FM. I'm Dana Hill, speaking today with Dr. Allie Morton from the UF College of Veterinary Medicine. We're going to take a short break, and then we're going to be back with more Animal Airwaves Live right after this. Welcome back to Animal Airwaves Live here on WUFT-FM. This is our weekly hour-long show devoted to the discussion of the health and welfare of animals. I'm Dana Hill, talking today with Dr. Allie Morton from the UF College of Veterinary Medicine, and we're talking about not just horses, but lameness and issues with horses' gaits. And as we have been discussing this, we've talked about some of the problems, particularly related to the horse's hoof, that may cause some discomfort. Now, earlier when we began the show, Dr. Morton, you mentioned mechanical and neurological issues. And if we've been talking about the hoof, are we, in those cases, talking about mechanical problems?
Mostly when we're talking about problems in the hoof, it's less mechanical, except for we talked a little bit about the hoof balance, which will influence certainly the mechanics and the normal weight bearing, which may lead to pain. And so most of what we talk about in lameness is discomfort or pain. When we talk about mechanical, it may be something as simple as if they develop some scar tissue in a muscle and that muscle no longer has the normal stretchability that it would have. And so that shortens the gait. So that would look as a gait asymmetry. It may look similar to a horse that has a lameness that's caused by pain, but it's not a discomfort. It's just more of a mechanical inhibition.
So in that case, it may not even be that it hurts the horse as much as just the horse isn't as flexible, let's say, as it once was.
Right. And it moves differently than it used to.
Now, would that happen more often with older horses?
Not necessarily. It happens a lot more with breed disciplines. That particular type of lameness that we see when we get kind of scarring in the muscles is seen commonly in horses that do rapid speed and then stops. And so they're kind of stopping very quickly and they're using the muscles in their hind end. And it commonly happens in kind of the muscles below the gluteal muscles and areas. And they get scar tissue in that. And it makes them look like they have a little floppy kind of, or a little slap to their gait in the hind limb. And it can be variable. It can be very subtle or it can be very severe depending on the amount of scar tissue in that muscle.
Forgive my ignorance, but what kind of performance would require a horse to go quickly and then suddenly stop?
Some of what we call our Western performance horses. So horses that, if you've heard of barrel racing horses or the cutting and reining disciplines. So those are horses that, you see herding the calves and the cows. And so there's performance that they're judged on those. And so they go at high speeds and then they make turns and quick stops to either, you know, go around that barrel or to herd that calf. And so those guys are very common for them to have more of that type of an injury than, say, our thoroughbred racehorse that just runs until he's at the end of the race and then slows down
and
gradually.
Okay, great. Horses that do a lot of jumping. Now, this is a category of horse. Now, would this be a particular kind of breed of horse that would be more likely to be for jumping?
We see certain breeds that are more commonly used for jumping. So our thoroughbreds and what we call our warm bloods are probably our most common breeds that we see in what we call the English sports horses that involve jumping. So whether they're doing jumping for form, which we call the hunters that go in and they're judged on how they go around the course, their behavior, and how nice their form is, versus the show jumpers that go over the big fences for speed, and they're judged on how quickly they can get over and how clear they can go without knocking those fences down. So those are probably the most common breeds used for those, and the three-day event horses as well too that you've seen. Those are the horses are commonly seen in the Olympics that do the cross country, very exciting jumping. Those are a lot of those horses are also thoroughbreds and warm bloods.
So if horses that have to do a lot of jumping, might it happen that over time some of their joints can experience not just stress, which of course you would expect them to, that stress over time, can that lead to damage to the cartilage? And if it did, would that be a kind of mechanical problem, or am I still not getting the mechanical part?
No, right? Absolutely. It's not so much the mechanical. Initially, it may be mechanical and on a very kind of a small, even cellular kind of way that we wouldn't recognize a change in the horse's gait. But certainly wear and tear, osteoarthritis, is something that horses get. It's probably one of the more common causes of lameness in horses, and it's very similar to people who, you know, do athletics or, you know, people that just kind of do day-to-day activities. We develop kind of wear and tear in our joints, and it leads to arthritis. And it's certainly very common in our performance horses, because a lot of those English sport horses, jumpers, those horses don't mature in their discipline until they're in their teens. So it's kind of like us in our, you know, early or late 30s and early 40s before they get to their kind of their pinnacle of their kind of performance.
If we're talking about the age of a horse, when we're talking about performance horses, eventually these horses will not be called upon to do some of this intense activity anymore. They will either just not perform as well as they once did when they were younger, or, you know, we hope that they wouldn't have experienced an injury that would make them stop. But eventually, you know, they, just as we do when we get older, I mean, you know, I certainly can't run as fast as I once could, and there's nothing physically that is wrong with me. I didn't hurt myself or anything like that. I just can't do as quickly as I can. And that might happen to horses as well. But when we talk about horses that are older that maybe haven't ceased doing a lot of physical activity simply because they got injured, might they, in spite of not having an injury specifically, might they just because they're older develop problems with their gait?
Yeah, absolutely. Then that would be kind of the osteoarthritis. And just like us, my mom used to say, youth, or still probably says, youth is wasted on the young, right? Mm-hmm. So we all, as we age, you know, we get age-related disease, and osteoarthritis and some of the other musculoskeletal problems do increase with age. And so those horses do. And just like us, it's important for the older horse not to do more than he is capable of doing, but to keep fit and keep conditioned, because the other, you know, kind of adage is that use it or lose it. So certainly those are important things for them.
So if the horse has perhaps suffering from arthritis of some sort or another, are there treatments that are available to reduce the effects of the arthritis, even if it isn't, say, reversible?
Yes, we have a lot of symptomatic treatment for osteoarthritis. And actually, the university, we are collaborating with the Health Science Center to look at ways to prevent osteoarthritis in horses and people. And so that's a very, very keen area of research right now. And we're hopeful that some of those therapies will become available for horses and people in the future to limit it. But there are symptomatic treatments. So just like you or I might take ibuprofen, there's anti-inflammatory drugs that can help horses, and we have some other medications that we can give to them as supplements within their feed, and also as injections that help all the kind of the joint health. So what we call chondroprotective agents, and some of those are supplements like glucosamine and chondroitin sulfate that we can get at the health food store here, and they make supplements for horses, and then there's injectable ones that help that as well. And then we can go directly, if you've ever been to the orthopedist and had bad shoulder or hip, you can get your joint injected, and we can do direct injections into horses' joints with anti-inflammatory medications and other medications that improve the health of that joint.
So are some of those treatments more commonly then performed on older horses?
Yeah, they're actually quite commonly performed on performance horses as they get older. But even in younger horses, we do those treatments as well, too. And some of those treatments, we hope, are kind of stopping some of the development, you know, the inflammation that causes some of the arthritis to continue to develop. We can help kind of prevent that as well.
Mm-hmm. I'd love to hear more about this research that you're kind of doing on arthritis and how is that kind of focused right now?
I do most of my kind of work is clinical, and I do a little bit of what I call the cheerleading part of the research in the osteoarthritis research at the university. But there are some of my colleagues that are doing research with a group that's at the University of Florida looking at ways, gene therapies, to decrease basically the inflammation that starts in the joint when we have like an injury that starts, you know, inflammation and that will lead to osteoarthritis down the road. So looking directly at ways to produce anti-inflammatory components or proteins in the joint by inserting a gene into your joint, a little virus-associated gene. So pretty cool stuff.
That is fascinating. Let's talk about some of the neurological problems that might affect a horse's gait. Because you mentioned neurological towards the top of
right.
the show, too. What would some of those problems be?
We see them not as commonly, but we do see a few different types. And one of them is a developmental type of a disease where they have abnormal development of the vertebrae in their spine, in their neck, so cervical vertebra. And that abnormal kind of bone development can cause narrowing of where the spinal cord goes. And depending on how narrow that gets, that can compress the spinal cord, or if the horse moves their neck in a certain way and that's narrow, it can kind of pinch the spinal cord, and that can damage some of the basically the spinal cord, and the nerves that come out of that spinal cord will not function properly. So that can cause some neurologic problems. And those horses, sometimes it will be as subtle as just looking like, you know, their balance is not quite right to very more severe. We also have infectious causes of neurologic disease. And very commonly, one that we hear about is EPM, or equine protozoal myelitis, which is a protozoa that's in the, you know, environment that horses that become, for some reason, immunosuppressed may ingest this protozoa and then become infected with it. And it goes along the spinal cord and causes similar signs. And those can be treated. Some of the neurologic diseases can be treated, and some of them very successfully.
Mm-hmm. Are there categories of lameness that require surgical procedures?
Yes, actually quite a lot of, and that's the fun part of my job, I feel, is that when I get to be able to do some surgery. Not all lamenesses certainly need to be treated surgically, but there are quite a few. So horses, if we see racehorses, that commonly will get little bone chips within their joint, and we can go out and remove those with an arthroscope, just like you and I would go if we had knee surgery, through a little camera, little small incisions. We can go in and remove those fragments or clean up any kind of damaged cartilage. Tendon and ligament injuries, we can go in and clean up those and remove parts of those. And so bone fractures, if we have fractures, we can repair those as well.
If one had to clean up a chipped bone, not only would you need to remove the little chip of bone that mm-hmm. might be irritating to the cartilage,
right.
let's say, but you might you also have to kind of smooth out the place where the chip from which the chip emerged?
Right. So certainly with the traumatic chips, a lot of times they have a clean little bed if they're a nice fresh one, but we need to go in there and make sure that's healthy kind of bone that's going to heal over, and that if it's in an area where there is cartilage, that we can allow, you know, kind of what we call scar tissue cartilage or fiber cartilage to heal over that, so that we optimize that surface. And in some types of disease, in the developmental disease, what we call osteochondrosis, they may have fragments because of abnormal development. So we remove that fragment, but where that fragment came from, there may be still a lot of abnormal bone in that area as part of that development. So we need to clean that out as well. So certainly, you know, we get to get the chip is like the prize, but we have to do some work when we're in there as well.
You mentioned fractures. Why is it that I assumed that fractures in a horse's bones might almost be life-ending?
They can be, and certainly there are a lot of them that are not repairable, and the nature of the horse that, you know, they have to stand, and they can't, you know, put them on crutches, you can't ask them to lay in a bed while something heals. If we have a severe catastrophic fracture, that can be very difficult to repair. But there are a spectrum of types of fractures, and a lot of the fractures that horses commonly get, we can repair, and some of these horses can go on to be performance horses. Some of them will be, you know, maybe lower level performance horses, or maybe pasture sound, you know, so they can be be happy pasture pets, but depending on that, the site and the severity of the location, a lot of them we can repair these days.
Yeah, okay. So I think of fractures as almost usually requiring a cast. I mean, if someone broke his or her leg, you're gonna need to be off it for a while. Mm-hmm. What kind of fractures can a horse experience that can be repaired while still allowing that horse to not be confined to lying on its side?
So we see a lot of fractures kind of when we were talking earlier about in the lower part of the limb. So in the, especially in kind of that ankle area or that fetlock area, there are some bones that commonly get fractured. So the cannon bone is an area where we get fractures. And then the two bones below that, the first and the second phalanx, are areas of common fracture. And so those fractures can actually be repaired, just similarly to if you had a fracture, we go in surgically, put plates and screws in them. And then the horse may have to have a cast as well, too. But most of those horses will need to weight bear. So one of the limitations that we have with all that is the strength of the materials that we put in there, because we're putting this big, heavy horse on, you know, some smaller screws than might be ideal for the amount of force that they're going to be taking. But for a great majority of them, that we do have equipment now that is successful.
Now, the screws and various plates and whatnot that are used for surgery in orthopedics are amazing devices, medical devices, right? Mm-hmm. Some of them are certainly made out of material that is lightweight, but still fairly strong. But then again, I mean, when we're talking about an 1,100-pound animal, even something that might be made out of titanium or something can have its limitations,
right?
When you're talking about it's going to have to be small, because we know that we're working in an area that isn't very large.
Right. Some of the bones are very similar and even smaller than some of our bones. And so we don't have the luxury of putting something that would be strong enough to hold that together, because we don't have the actual physical space. So, but most of them are made of stainless steel or titanium, or, you know, composites that are similar to that, and very much the same type of materials and instrumentation that we would use for repairing fractures in people.
As we approach the end of the show, I wonder if it's possible to, though I hate this to sound sort of crude, if we can talk about some lamenesses as being like a good kind of lameness, by which I mean a lameness that shouldn't be really life-limiting, and lamenesses that would, to you, represent some greater trouble.
Yeah, so certainly there's a broad spectrum. And so we always, you know, like there's certain types of injuries where like, well, it's better to have this than this.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there are certainly, you know, the more minor injuries and some of the ligament and tendon injuries that are more mild and in certain locations are, you know, better to have. The one you want to have is a horse that has a stone bruise. He steps on there and, you know, he gets a bruise in his sole, and that resolves just like we would have a bruise over time. The ones that are more serious, certainly fractures we talked about, but some of the severe wounds can cause infection into joints and other types of musculoskeletal structures. And those can be very serious types of lameness and injury, more so because in that period of time that they're infected from the wound, we need to get that horse as comfortable as possible to save some of the other limbs. So if they are very, very lame on one limb and they overweight bear, and we talked about founder earlier and the attachment of the hoof capsule to the coffin bone, if they overweight bear on that, they're at a risk of, you know, producing what we call mechanical founder in that other foot. So until we have to get those horses very comfortable very quickly and get rid of the infection as quickly as possible, and if it's in a joint, before it develops severe arthritis. So those can be very big challenges, and those are serious kind of life-threatening types of lameness. And then there's a lot of things in between that. So depending on the severity and the location and size of the horse and what they do for a living can dictate what prognosis they have. And that's there's a lot of things out there that we deal with on a day-to-day basis that are in that category.
I hate to almost sound silly, but of course, we know that if a person breaks his or her leg, you're looking at probably months of being in a cast. Is it just really not feasible at all to ask a horse to not stand for months? Is it?
Yeah, no, they have to stand, and we can support them. So some horses, depending on their temperament and their size, can be supported during that time in a sling. That's not going to probably last for, you know, 6 months, but during maybe some of the early crucial parts of joint healing or bone healing, we can put them in a sling and have supportive therapy, but it takes a lot of intensive care to maintain that horse, mm-hmm. and not all horses will behave in that as well, too.
Yeah.
So some of them are very good. Some of them are like, no, this is not what I'm supposed to be in. I'm not going to do it. So they can be their worst enemy in certain cases.
The good news that we know from doing this program for a while and speaking about issues related to horses, that horse owners are generally some of the best informed animal owners and
Absolutely.
Lovers of animals out there. So we probably haven't necessarily told horse owners anything new that they didn't know. Really, with an episode like this, we're trying to kind of talk to people like me who may not know a lot about this, but it's good to learn about. So I really appreciate you coming back
and
talking to us about this, and I hope that we'll be able to talk about horses again in the future.
Absolutely. Thank you, Dana.
I want to say thank you so much to Glenn Richards and Richard Drake in the control room and Sarah Carey and her staff over at the University of Florida College of Veterinary Medicine. I am Dana Hill, and we will be back very soon with another episode of Animal Airwaves Live. Bye-bye.